if you couldn't hold the duality within you,
mm-hmm.
then would it, you would cease to function. Human relationships would die.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing. In order to procreate, you have to find somebody with opposite genitals, with opposite sex organs,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you have to ignore all of that and procreate with them.
Pretty much, Joe gets like 4 different credit cards that he can go ahead and do whatever he wants.
Because in the next 20 days, because they only have to sacrifice a person every 100 years to this volcano.
Yeah.
And it's been 99 years, 11 months, and 11 days. So we're just going to assume that we've got
19
days.
Yeah.
If you want to know how bad I am at numbers, go to any of our episodes. Yeah. But yeah. He's just, all right, I'll do it.
And so he takes him up on the offer, and then we see him renting on the phone.
Yeah, they do a pan shot over the city, and he's making a phone call.
He's renting a limo. And he's like, does a driver come with that?
Oh, great. Do you rent anything else?
No? Okay.
That's all then.
Yeah, and his driver is a man by the name of Marshall, played by Ossie Davis.
Yes. I only have him in my notes as wise old limo driver.
Yeah. And Marshall starts asking Joe where he's going to be going, because he needs to know in order to do his work.
Well, I think I might do some shopping today.
Oh, what are you gonna be shopping for?
Clothes.
What kind of clothes are you looking for?
I don't really know.
And that's when Marshall stops the car and he's like, look, I don't know who you are. Clothes are very personal. I take that very serious. And I can't tell you who you are.
Right. I spent all this time, all my life trying to figure out who I am, and now I'm tired.
Yeah. And, like, he reaches back and he's like, what's your name? He's like, oh, Joe. And so they shake, and then Marshall, like, goes from the front of the limo to the back. And this is where it feels like they go from being, like, a rich guy and a servant to, like, being, like, equals. Because, like, Marshall starts taking the role of, like, personal shopper, so to speak.
Yeah, he's definitely providing him guidance. This isn't your average day as a limo driver. I think he recognizes that Joe isn't his typical customer either.
Right. He doesn't have, like, the window blocking him.
No, yeah. Well, here's the thing. He says, I don't want to know anything about you. I don't want to do anything. But then once he gets to the back of the car, he proceeds to do the opposite of everything he said. He showed him the right stores to go to.
Right.
Where Joe buys him a tuxedo.
Right. That's like the first thing is when Joe's like, oh, he's like, you should get yourself a tuxedo. And Joe's like, okay, I'll get one if you get one. He's like, I can't buy an Armani tux. And it's like, I'll give it to you, or I'll buy you one because you're giving me all of this advice.
And you're just supposed to be driving around all this mm-hmm. advice. I suppose, you know, service is paid, you know?
Yeah.
But there are 2 Great Danes outside the store. So that's 3 Great Danes in this movie.
This is the second montage.
Oh my gosh. The hat shop. When he's like, he grabs, the guy's silently staring at him, holding this thing of hats, this pile of hats.
Mm-hmm.
Joe pulls the top one off, puts it on, he goes, this one? And all my notes are not that one. It is the ugliest hat. It looks like this Crocodile Dundee thing, but it's a little too big for him, and it looks awful.
Kind of on the nose, which is like, again, like, there's a lot of elements to the story where it's like just beating you over the head with the obviousness, which as a kid can be very helpful if you're trying to understand metaphor for the first time.
Okay. He gets a haircut by Lillian.
Yeah, Carol Kane.
Lillian!
Shazam! It's so great. And like everything in this montage eventually comes back into play later on.
Yes. And so then we go to the luggage store.
Oh, the luggage store. This is like...
not everything's Little Mermaid screaming, but yeah.
I would totally watch a movie where it was just this man selling luggage, because the actor just like goes hardcore. He's like, he understands what movie he's in, uh-huh. and he is playing it to like the 10th level.
He probably delivers the humor of this movie to the best degree of anybody in this film.
Agreed.
He leans in hard. He's like, you see, luggage is my passion.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, where are you going? And he's like, well, I'm going to be flying, and then I'm going to be, you know, traveling to an island by a boat. And he's like, a real journey. Yeah.
If I had the means and the wherewithal, I would purchase these.
Yeah.
Because he shows him, like, this deluxe model. He's like, watertight.
Yeah. It's a steamer trunk.
Finest material.
Yeah. And Joe's like, I'll take 4. And the guy leans in and he says, may you live to be 1,000 years old. And Joe's just like, you too. Because I don't know how you would respond to that.
Yeah. this? Yeah. And the dude asks him, limo driver Marcos. He goes, so am I taking you back to Staten Island?
He's like, no, let's go to a hotel for tonight.
What's a nice hotel?
How about we go to the Plaza?
The Plaza's nice.
Well, where would you go?
The Pierre.
Then let's go to the Pierre. And then he like drops him off and he's like, I was wondering if you would have dinner with me. And he's like, I can't have dinner with you. I have a family to go home to.
And he's like, oh, well, I suppose that would be the case.
Yeah.
And the last words Marco says to him is, do you have anybody? And he's like, no, but I think there are times when you walk through life when you just don't have anybody with you.
Right.
And then Marcos goes, you're going to be all right. Yeah. And he walks away and I'm like, end movie right there.
Yeah. Yeah. You could end the movie on so many points. It's a really short, really short movie.
But we're going to talk about it for the next 2 hours. Woo! Okay. So... so then there's another montage. So they have these little talking points, and then there's Tom eating dinner and dancing around his room, and then he's having a drink, and then he's in his pajamas, and then he's
sleeping.
He's not sleeping.
Oh, no, he's not. He's just staring up at the ceiling. And then we hear the sound of an airplane going through, and this really weird shot of the plane itself. Yes. Stretched out.
It's all distorted and it hurts your face. But if you hear the Welcome to Los Angeles line, that was Meg Ryan's second appearance in the film.
Oh, because we're about to come up on her third.
Yep.
So Meg Ryan plays like all of the important female roles in this movie.
All the titled characters.
Which makes me, again, looking at through this movie as though you're looking at it through Joe's perspective, kind of makes me think like, okay, so does Joe see all of the women in his life as being the same?
Sure.
Why not? Or all of the love interests specifically? Because, like, Carol Kane definitely wasn't. The doctor's secretary wasn't. But, like, the ones who, like, he has romantic ties to Dee Dee. He has romantic ties to the second character and the third character.
Uh-huh.
It's all of the women that he would be attracted to. It's always the same woman. They're not individuals. So
and you could, okay, look, I can romanticize near anything because I've read a lot of novels, humble brag, but I think if I were to conjecture, I would say that what the writer is trying to convey is that within each woman that he had a deep emotional connection with, and we only get to see three of them, he saw something in, well, really the two before our main, that were parts of her. So he saw this person broken by a system that they couldn't control. Mm-hmm. And now this one we're going to talk about at great length has a similar situation with her heart, emotionally with her heart. And both of those things show up in our third character. And I think that's what it's supposed to mean. Like, I saw you before. Like, I saw this heart that I loved for whatever reason. Maybe not. I didn't love you for these flaws, but I saw this. I don't know.
Well, and that's a line that we didn't bring up when Joe was talking with Dee Dee at the restaurant. He was like, you know, I wanted to tell you the first time I saw you, I swear I'd seen you before. Which, Jen, you pointed out when we were watching, that indicates that Meg Ryan in the script of the film actually played four characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Meg Ryan's his mom.
Gross.
Oedipus.
Well, okay. So in our other previous scene with the gray Grammar.
Yeah. So this, when Joe gets off the flight to LA, he's looking around and you see Meg Ryan holding up this sign that says Joe Banks. And it's just the best sign.
Yeah. It's a bright yellow sign with these floral letters with like blue outlines around it.
Yeah.
It's glorious. And you're like, here's the thing. You first see it and you're like, that's a little over the top. But then as you get to know her character, you're like, oh.
Yeah. This is Angelica Greenamore. This is the guy who hired him's daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she introduces herself, and both her and her sister, spoilers alert, later on, are very much like, you know, Dad, he doesn't let us talk about who we are and what we do. And everybody immediately breaks those rules. But she's like, I'm a flibberty gibbet. And I'm like, what? I should probably Google that. I don't want to.
Yeah.
But like she immediately dismisses herself as this thing in the first conversation that they have. And that hurt me a little bit. I was like,
She probably just is looked down upon. Like the fact that her dad, she's like, Daddy told me to tell you that I don't know anything. I don't know why he hired you and you're not supposed to tell me. And that's when she says, I'm a flibberty gibbet. And then later on, her sister, spoilers, talks about how she considers her sister. She's like, I love my sister, but she's messed up. She probably is the one in the family that nobody seems to respect.
Yes.
And that's why she puts herself down.
Yes. And that's why she puts herself out in ways that are like these kind of grandiose things. She wears these very flamboyant outfits. And she's got this short, angular haircut that looks really amazing on Megan.
Oh, yeah.
And she's, I'm an artist and a poet. They sit down to dinner together, mm-hmm. and he has like clams, and she gets a crab, which she whacks with a hammer. She's like, ugly creatures, but they're so good. And then she smacks it with a hammer, and it's just delightful.
It is. And then she's like, I'm a painter and a poet, and there's one of my paintings right now.
So it cuts to the bottom of this painting, right? My new job is to describe the artwork that shows up in films to you guys. Okay, so it's done in the style of...
Do you want me to look that up real quick?
He's a modern artist. He does comic book panels. They were really huge in the 80s. And so this would have been relevant to the style of the time. And at the bottom of the screen, it's 2020. At the bottom of the canvas is a couple sitting in a car. And the girl says, this is a real scene in a speech bubble. And then it pans up to the second panel and it goes, this is a real scene. And I think the guy is saying it, or maybe she's saying it again. It doesn't matter. Then it pans up to the top panel, presumably outside the car that the couple's sitting in, and it's a car at a Lover's Point type place looking out over Los Angeles. Lichtenstein.
Yeah. They're like the way that the painting transitions into the next scene.
What she's literally saying in that moment is she goes, what you have to understand is that art pulls from real life. And so the car looking out over the city turns out to be her car looking out over the city. And now they're sitting there and they're nearly identical to the couple in the painting. What I want to point out to you is that when you look at the back of the car in this scene, the license plate says bad girl.
In the painting? Or no.
Her car.
Her car.
It says bad girl.
Okay.
That's all.
All right.
Because then the scene happens and then another thing happens, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And so they're like just sitting there and she leans over and she's like, would you like to hear one of my poems?
Oh, Lydia, tickle my ears with this.
And so he's like, yeah, I'd like to hear. And she says, she positions her hand and she says the poem. What was it? Long ago, the delicate tangles of his hair covered the emptiness of my hands. And she's got like one hand like cupped and open up to the sky.
He's like, all right. And she goes.
And she's caressing like the palm inside. Mm-hmm. And she's like, would you like to hear it again? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, long ago, the delicate tangles of his hair covered the emptiness of my hands.
Yes. Okay. Let me scream into the void on this one. The first time she delivered it as a performance. Mm-hmm. And the second time she delivers it, and I don't know if this is true or not, so call me out and crash me down about it. The second time she says it, she believes it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, as much as I want to be like, why did she say it? Well, it's so weird that a poet would say their poem twice, but one was just like, long ago, the delicate tangles of his hair filled the emptiness of my hand. And then it was just like, long ago.
The delicate tangles of his hair.
Covered the
emptiness of my hand.
Oh my God. And like, she gives, I mean, Meg Ryan has good game.
Like, she plays three different characters in this movie.
Mm-hmm. And if you have slight facial recognition issues, you wouldn't know they were the same character.
No, because they're completely different. Mm-hmm. So, and then Angelica breaks down and talks about how she's like, have you ever thought about killing yourself? And Joe's just like, which is interesting. The last time he was in a romantic situation with a woman, he says something very deep and vulnerable, and the other party freaks out. And now she is saying something deep and vulnerable and he's freaking out.
Yes. He's like, why would you do that? Like, you can't, some things take care of themselves. You don't have to like do that to yourself.
He's Goldilocks and Meg Ryan is the three little bears. The three bears, like one porridge is too hot, one porridge is too cold, the other's just right.
What I do like is that he's having these emotional connections. And really it's not the different person that matters. It's the not the physically different person that matters. It's the emotionally different person that matters.
Yeah.
All women are all the same. That's what the movie's trying to say.
That's what you could
take
off the surface of it, but I really do think it's probably supposed to be something like, you know.
Yeah.
The good heart of a woman.
Or it's that idea of finding just the one rather than just kind of settling for someone who you're not entirely happy with.
Or they're convenient. Or they haven't found themselves yet.
Right.
And it's an interesting thought. But like he turns to her and he's like, you already know that what you want to do.
Right.
You know the thing that's uncomfortable, that scares you, the thing you're going to step through. Right. And she's like, what? You mean stop taking money and leaving LA?
Yeah. He's like, look, I mean, I think some things take care of themselves if you're afraid of something versus like if the choice is between killing yourself and just doing the thing that you're afraid of, then maybe you should just take that leap.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how he rations it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm with you on that. Can I just say that, okay, now she's gonna drive him back to the hotel. They're all crying. Everybody's crying. We're all crying. You're crying too. Her earrings are amazing in this scene. They were Art Deco, like triangles with inlaid mother of pearl with these weird dangly triangle bits, and they would look out of place on my head, but I would steal them so hard. They were gorgeous.
Yeah. And then she's like, I can meet you for breakfast before I take you to the dock.
Now, this is them outside of his hotel in LA, and you might notice her front license plate is different than her last license, back license plate. Do you know what the front license plate says now?
Good girl.
Yeah. There's this flip. She was this hardcore bad from like this. And I say that she's no less bad, but maybe the core is softened because at the front she was so protected and like cold, and she was presenting this person that she thought she needed to be around this guy.
Right.
Then he proved to be genuine and interested and like and compliant and not trying to take advantage of her. And now the script is flipped and it says good girl. And I know that's probably not what they were going for with that, but I'm like, yeah, yeah, perspective. She's a good girl. She's just in a crappy situation where dad buys everything.
Right. And it's really like if you grow up with that dependency, it can be very hard for you to break away from it because you are pretty much like, so I'm going to be broke unless I have a job. And the only way that I get jobs is if someone else gives them to me. That's like where you're like, that's how you kind of cope. That's how you were raised.
Yeah. And her dad, it's reiterated several times. It's like the whole freaking plot. He indentures people to himself. And he makes them be in line with what he wants because he's got more money than all the churches combined.
Yeah. And he takes advantage of people when they're vulnerable. Like he took advantage of Joe because he was a hypochondriac. And how much you want to bet, like for however his doctor got a hold of him, his doctor was like, hey, you were telling me about this thing that you needed. And now I'm going to go ahead and give you like this guy who's a hypochondriac who, you know, is going to be easy to take advantage of. He's going to be easy to us for us to manipulate. And then Angelica, she's going to be easy to manipulate because, you know, you can just give her everything at a very early age.
She's so dependent. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so. But they cut to okay, so he goes and sits on the beach all night because he's in LA and he doesn't want to go back to be he's gonna be awake all night anyway. He might as well not lay in bed, so sit on the beach and look at the water.
Yeah, and then the sun comes up and we hear the theme of the song. We hear the theme song of the movie come through.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, there's like an it's like a lullaby and everything.
Oh yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, and then we cut to breakfast.
Yeah.
At a parrot cafe.
We see the sun coming up, and as the sun comes up, there's like this picture that Angelica's holding up, and this is when we get the Tom Hanks face in the sun.
She's done a watercolor for him with his face in the sun, and it looks very much like the scene we just left.
It looks like the sun from the Teletubbies.
Do you like it? Yeah, with Tom Hanks, so much better. Do you like it? And he's genuine, but not overly interested. Yeah. He's like, yeah, hold on. But she goes, I'm sorry, I was so grotesque last night, and I was like, mood.
So she asks him, like, she apologizes. At one point, she asks him, can you answer me one question? Why are you dressed like Jungle Jim? Because Tom Hanks has, like, this safari getup. And then he puts on that hat.
Oh, it pushes his ears down to the side.
And then, like, the way that the camera's positioned, you see he's like, oh, is this too much for the boat? And then he puts on the hat. And there's, like, this parrot in a cage behind him. And you see that right over his shoulder. So he looks like a guy in a safari getup with, like, parrot on his shoulder.
And she smiles and laughs at him a little bit, and she's like, it's fine. It's fine for the boat.
Yeah.
Then they drive to the dock. She goes, oh, we gotta go. She's smoking in the middle of the cafe. We gotta go. I don't know if the guy who's got your luggage knows how to, can use my directions.
Yeah. Which you could very easily take as like, you know, either a jab at like maybe the guy's not doesn't speak English, or maybe it's just because she's a flibbertigibbet.
I have a flibbertigibbet.
Yeah, me too. And so they arrive at the dock and they see his luggage. His wonderful luggage being carried off, and you see Meg Ryan sitting on top of one of the luggages, and she's like, what's with the luggage, Felix?
Yeah. He's like, I'm not Felix, I'm Joe.
Yeah.
And then I think she talks to her sister. She's like, they both at the same time go, do you know where dad is?
Yeah. And she's like, see, neither one of us ever knows where our dad is. So we always assume the other does. It's all telegram. It's like,
telegrams and phone calls.
Telegrams and phone calls, eh, Angelica? And she's like, well, you're in a rotten mood.
It's the sun. It makes me cranky.
Yeah. And so it's Meg Ryan playing off of Meg Ryan. But
repartee, y'all.
But they're both, like, completely different characters, and they do such a good – she's such a great actress.
Yeah.
She's so good. She's like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yes. I'm with that. I'm for that. My original notes, however, I'm going to be honest with you, Lids. My original notes are like, I think I might have preferred Angelica on this trip than I would have preferred
Patricia?
Or Patricia.
I would, I am such a Patricia. So, like, I think, as an adult, I'm like, okay, I can totally understand, like, Angelica would definitely be much better on the boat. I would like to hang out with her more. But, like, when I was younger, I was like, I have to be a Patricia. I have to be, like, you know, I need to be independent. I need to be taking care of myself. I should not be getting, you know, if my dad were super rich, I shouldn't be, like, you know, catering to or getting involved with what he does, that sort of thing. So when
I identify with Angelica, who, like, slips herself a pill in the middle of dinner.
I think I'm a Didi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. A little messy.
I can see that. Wow. Aw.
Meg Ryan should play all three of us.
All of us with our three different hair colors.
This is like Eddie Murphy level multi-character. Like she's up there for me.
Yeah. And she manages to do it without any prosthesis and nothing that's super over the top. Okay. I'm gonna lay it out there. Her accents are a little terrible.
Yeah.
But the acting is not.
Right.
On any level bad. Okay.
Right.
Angelica, I put her down as, was it Michelle Pfeiffer who was Catwoman?
In Batman Returns?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She pulls some serious Michelle Pfeiffer vibes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. In that scene. And then she does, Ellen Green is Dee Dee.
Yeah.
And now we're Meg Ryan being Meg Ryan being Patricia.
Yeah.
But like, you know, with remove one of those layers, she is Patricia.
Yeah.
She's like coming into her romantic lead person self.
Right. This is probably where, like, I mean, in some synopsises or like little snippets that I've read about this movie, they're like, this is a romantic comedy. And I'm like, no, not really. Mm-hmm. Like, that is definitely like a...
It's a major component.
Mm-hmm.
But we are now, like, I would say we are at least 60%. Mm-hmm. It feels like 60. Maybe it's more like 55%. But for that to be the time when the romantic interest shows up,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not square romantic comedy math.
Right.
I think that we culturally just have Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan attached because we've been with those two so long that it feels more like romantic comedy now than it probably did when this came out.
That's true. They weren't an established thing yet. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen Meg Ryan in a really long time, and I totally see Tom Hanks everywhere. So
yeah,
he's my divorced dad.
Yeah. So they are then, we then have the scene at dinner where where Patricia explains the, like, oh, well, we're going to Waponi Woo. And what I know about this is that, you know, it's like this combination of Polynesian, Celtic, Hebrew, and Latin influences.
Oh, man.
Because
that boat crash.
Because there was like this, like, boat of Hebrew druids that, like, took the wrong turn and they crashed into this island. And it's just like they're trying to explain away some very racist stereotypes, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. She says they're addicted to orange soda. He goes, orange soda? And she goes, yeah, right here in this book I'm reading.
They love orange soda and they have no sense of direction.
Yes. And this is a moonlit dinner on a yacht. It's just her, the soon-to-be owner of the yacht, talking about how the food's really good. One of the guys is a cook, apparently, and there are sunflowers all over behind Joe.
Yeah.
And that's important because we care about our daisies and our sunflowers.
Yes, we do.
I have this theory that they couldn't find enough Polynesians that didn't think that this was racist, so they had to pull in a whole bunch of other actors from different cultures fill in the rest of the crowd. Oh my goodness,
like a spaghetti western. Are you slightly brown? Well, you're native now.
Yes.
Great gravy.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So, moving on from some uncomfortable things that we will be going in deeper later on.
The boat is called Tweedledee.
Yes. And she, like, says that it's her dad's, and she's like, and Joe asks, why were you so snotty to me back on the dock? And she's like, oh, it's because I was angry at my father. And he's like, they start going back and forth, like, you know, saying like, oh, well, why do you do favors for people who you're angry with? And she's just like, F you.
Well, is it bedtime yet?
This is like right before it. So if you want to go into that, like, they're down in the docks. Joe is going to sleep.
Yeah. So he's in bed reading a book, right? And she walks in and she goes, is this okay for you? And I'm like, she is already in bed. Why would you start talking about it now? But whatever. My notes are about is that he's reading and she's being overly solicitous. Now she's like trying to either make amends. She's had this kind of epiphany, or at least this cool down, and now she's willing to work out what happened earlier. And she wants to explain to him why she's acting the way that she's acted. And she gives this long speech that I don't want to reiterate, because sometimes an actor's given a chunk of dialogue, a monologue, right? And it's like they're present from the writer. it happens to Peter Capaldi like 8 times an episode in like the last half of the season as he was the doctor. He would just have these long rants, right? And I'd be like, that wasn't for me. That was a gift from the writer so that you could act the shit out of it. Mm-hmm. And this is Meg's acting the shit out of it scene.
Right.
She's saying that her father has always been controlling of her, and as soon as she could become independent, she wanted to be. And the most compelling part of her speech is when she's like, he got me. He named a price, the yacht, for Joe's passage to the island, right? He's like, this is yours if you do what I say. And then she was like, and then I did what he said, and I knew that I had a price and mm-hmm. that he could just take it.
Right.
But like, Joe had that same rant when he was like, $300 and I've mm-hmm. been living with this hell.
Yeah. Well, and like, she even mentions that she loves her father even though he's not around. She loves her sister even though she knows she's messed up. Mm-hmm. And it's still like, you know, there's still this whole like, you know, she's conflicted about this whole moment.
But she doesn't mean to take it out on him.
Right.
And they're going to be together and he's going to see the hurt that she has on her, and she doesn't want him to be confused about it. Mm-hmm. It's like very vulnerable, very early on. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of impressed with that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to requote the entire thing. No. It's very wordy and you'd have to watch it to get Meg's whole like shimmery eyed thing. Mm-hmm. Never been a good shimmery eyed person.
Fish montage.
So at this point, the director steeped his fingers a la Mr. Burns style and was like, you know, speaking of manipulation, how can I get the audience to unclench?
It's like, that was a lot, really tense scene, so we need something to loosen things up.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the fourth montage, by the way.
She had suggested they go fishing, and so they cut to fishing.
Is this the fourth montage? I'm trying to remember. There was the first at the beginning, and then there was the second with the shopping. And then technically there was the third with, you could count the third one was when Joe was dropped off right before he flies over into LA.
I don't know, man. The montage.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many different formulas for montage that it's hard. Is it mm-hmm. when two different things are combined? Can you have dialogue over it? Does it have to be a smash together of different episodes of different things that are slightly related but would take too much time to explain? Like, there's a couple different kinds that are going on. Mm-hmm. And so I think we can fake it and say that we're on like 4 or 5, mm-hmm. but it's not going to suit. It's not going to do us any good trying to keep an accurate count on this film because they just go. I mean, here's the thing. All of the movies we've covered so far don't generally cover a great span of time. Or if they do, there's like, I don't even think there has been any that has been more than like a week or two. Mm-hmm. So this is a story that takes place over the course of 19 days. Mm-hmm. And so there's no way to show it all.
Right.
So now we're on the boat.
Yeah.
Now we're doing fishing because they can have fun after being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Cue the, what I now know is the hacky sack song. It's called Hacky Sacks. It's the Benny Hill theme song where it's like, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know, but is that the song that's actually
played? No, it's not.
Okay, fine. No, that's
just
a better one.
It's just kind of like the universal hijinks ensued song.
Yeah,
so like,
yeah.
They're on the back of the boat. She's catching fish and he's not. He's frustrated, but he's having a good time because she's having a good time.
He can't do fishing twine because he's using it like a
cat's cradle.
Yeah.
And Dagmar's drinking a Modell's and she's like, that guy can't do squat.
And then Joe gets a pull on his fishing rod.
Okay, but Meg Ryan catches 3 fish before he catches his fish.
It's because she's highly capable and she doesn't need a man, and yet she's going to settle for one.
I'm with you on this, but I have a thing, a biology thing. When you catch a fish, they fight you hard unless you spend a lot of time bringing them in on the line, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've never caught a fish, but I know I've watched a lot of fishing. That's not true. I've watched several fishing shows and I've learned the mechanics from other people. The first fish she pulls in is, if not completely dead, pretty close. Mm-hmm. The second fish she brings in is a rockfish, which is a garbage fish you don't eat that people catch off the docks around here all the time. Mm-hmm. And she could have actually technically caught that one. I would believe that. But the third fish is also a pretty lethargic, probably almost, if not completely dead fish. And I just have to point that out because they do it one more time in the film and it just, okay, so he's got the big one on his line now because of course he does.
And so he's like, there's this like whole comic bit of him trying to reel it in. People are holding him.
Everybody comes rushing over.
He loses the rod and then he grabs the rod. And then there's like this over the shot. There's like the camera's positioned over him. So you're seeing like, you're going to eventually see something like stick up from the side of the.
Yeah, they kind of foreshadow that. They also show her, she's holding him from behind because now it's a team effort. And when things go down, they come together.
Yeah. And then we see this like shark, this hammerhead Muppet shark just pop up, and he's all like,
"Hey, you guys!" It looked like the guy from Goonies. I don't remember the guy's name.
Chunk. Well, the character's name is it's not Chunk. It's it's like the guy who's like always hanging around with Chunk, I think.
Yeah, it's the one that's locked up.
So the character's name is Sloth. The actor's name is John Matsuska.
100%.
Hey, you guys.
Okay, here's my issue.
Yes, please.
Sharks' faces are made out of cartilage. And I don't know about you, but you can't bend your nose one way or the other, can you?
Right. So
you can't flip your earlobes one way or the other, can you? Because cartilage is not normally imbued with the tendons and muscles, sinews, that make motion independent possible.
Right.
So when you look at a hammerhead shark, its eyeballs don't move because it's stuck in this giant brick of cartilage. So when they pop up this puppet, and I'm so sorry that this is my mad voice, I wish it was more pleasant, but come with me down this journey, and the eyes angle towards Tom Hanks in a what? And its mouth is the wrong shaped mouth. Doesn't look like a hammerhead's mouth. It's got all these weird teeth, and they're shark teeth, but they're not how a hammerhead shark do, which is more like inverted because they shuffle around the bottom of the floor and suck stuff in, right? It's not a bitey fish. Like, if it comes across a carcass or whatever, it can bite a little bit, but it's not going to be like, ah, you know? Mm. So its eyeballs move, its mouth is wrong, Tom Hanks is like, whoa! And I'm like, how is this the cheesiest part of this movie?
It's not the worst part. Are you going to seriously talk like this is the worst part of this movie?
No, it's just the most technically inaccurate.
Okay.
It is like for a film that's got, this film has a lot of humor that I don't think hits home as well as it maybe could have if like a Eugene Levy gave it. But like, this is like hacky sack level of like, guys, come on. Guys, come on. The puppet? When you were writing this and you were like, and she runs to him and he runs to her and there's like, they're holding hands and there's like water and it's scary and she gets hit. Like, no, I think what we need here is a puppet. Yeah. Can we make the eyes articulate and can they go, weep? Sorry. Just was like, it took me. Here's the thing. I wasn't that far into the kiddie pool with this film and it just sucked me right out and I had to reset, like fully reset.
This montage itself is at least 3 or 4 minutes
long. It's upward of like 5 minutes.
It feels very stretched out. And by the time that you finally get to the punchline of a puppet hammerhead shark, it's a little drawn out.
I mean, like the scene before this, at the very end, Patricia says, "Have you ever slept on a boat before, Joe?" And he's just like, "No." And she's like, "It really messes with your dreams." This scene would have done so much better if it was just a weird, trippy dream sequence. Yeah.
That would have been much better. If he'd woken up and been like, whoa, she was totally right. I guess we never caught that fish together.
Yeah. Moving on.
Let's do, please.
They have another dinner where, you know, they're just like hanging out on the boat. And they're having like this moment between Patricia and Joe. And the two of them are just kind of, Joe's like, "Do you ever get used to it?" And she's like, "No, I don't get used to it. This is why I want the boat so bad."
Yeah, so this is a post-dinner drink scenario. There's paper lanterns everywhere. She's laying on the deck, just kicking her bare feet. And he's like talking to her.
Yeah, and she's like, this is what I want to take this boat away from the things of man. And Joe starts talking about how he, that courage really interests him, and he used to be really courageous, but he's not so much anymore. And Patricia, you know, offers, you know, like this sage advice that her dad has, which is always hilarious when people who don't really respect their parents still like will spout out words that their parents has. Everybody probably has that moment where they're just like not entirely respectful of their parents, but they still have aspects about their parents that they like.
Oh, I will 100%. I don't think it's hypocritical to feel two ways about a person. Mm-hmm. So I will talk smack about somebody and then anecdote something that they said or did with equal parts love. So it'll be like, oh yeah, this person I love who's a dipshit.
But that's just like kind of human nature.
If you couldn't hold the duality within you, then you would cease to function. Human relationships would die. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. In order to procreate, you have to find somebody with opposite genitals, with opposite sex organs, right? And then you have to ignore all of that and procreate with them. That's biology. has nothing to do with like romantic relationships, by the way, guys. I wasn't trying to make. I'm just talking about procreating. You have to ignore a lot.
Side.
Okay, so I work at a factory, and a bird escaped into the store, the factory space, and it's huge. So it's flying around. And I'm standing at my station, and I'm just like, Henry, because the bay doors are open. The bird is near it for the first time in like an hour. And I'm like, Henry, go outside now. Go outside, Henry, go outside. Being a complete dork because it's early in the morning and I can't function and be reasonable. The bird flies out and everybody cheers. It's a very cute moment that doesn't happen very often in this kind of workplace.
Yeah.
So my print lead, he's like, he's standing next to me and he goes, how did you know it was a boy? And I go, it was dumb enough to get stuck in here. And I know it's a sexist joke. And I know it's... I'm all the terrible things. I am human garbage, but... I love lots of men people, and I don't think they're dumb. It's just it was the easiest joke to throw at the moment, and he laughed at it. And then I was like, I don't really mean that. I don't have any problems with men, not generally, but it was really funny, right? And he's like, yeah. In the moment, I look so cracked wit. I love it when I pull one off. I can't often.
Yeah.
No. But anyways,
She
feels two ways about her dad.
Yeah, basically. And so it goes over into, they kind of have this moment and Joe just like, they get like really close together.
She goes in for a kiss.
Yeah. And he again, before like, you know, anything like really gets anywhere, he's saying like,
your dad offered me a bunch of money, gave me all this stuff to offer me so he can get this mineral from these people and I'm gonna throw myself in a volcano. And she's like, what?
He's like, you're not going to make me repeat all that again. And she's like trying to process all of this. And he's like, well, say something. And she's like, you tell me you're dying. You tell me you're jumping into a volcano. My mind is a blank. And I'm like, statement of the movie.
Yeah. It's true.
And then she goes to bed.
We're only 2/3 of the way through our review of Joe versus the Volcano Applauder. But now we're also 3 Meg Ryans of the way through. Hey. This is your audio engineer and person living 1,000 lifetimes thanks to good luggage, Jen. Thanking you for continuing to survive April's high-anxiety homebound adventure. Is anyone else tired of hearing the phrase uncertain times? I certainly am. Now. But one thing is definitely certain, and it's that we'd love to hear from you. Have a comment or suggestion for our show? You can tag us on Facebook using @ShockedAndApplaud or Twitter using ShockedApplaud. And if you can spare $1 a month, we could really use your help sustaining our monthly hosting bills. Check out our Patreon link in the show's description. Will Joe back down and decide to go home for a second opinion on his brain cloud? Will Patricia get to keep her boat? Is there actually a volcano anywhere in this movie? We'll have some answers for you in 1 week. Along with a lot of questions I don't think we could answer. Like, how is Nicolas Cage not in this movie? From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.